seem to me that it'd be sufficient. Maybe. For the school people, somebody in authority there to be able to tell these people to leave who are ordered in or around, and then if they refuse to.
Well, then you get into the problem you have with the trespassing statute on notice and the enforceability of that, don't you think?
Well, if the Supreme Court decides correctly, there's no problem. You have a problem as far as who, if the person telling him to depart has the authority to tell him to depart, but we got the same thing here as far as who's giving written permission.
On that near problem, couldn't we say within 2 blocks or some other distance?
I would think so.
Mr. Chairman?
Whatever mile or something?
That's why I think the answer to that is. Yes, Tom?
Let me ask you, Tom, this. If I'm in a school zone, if I remain in a school zone, having an illegal reason or unlawful reason with written permission, I'm all right. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is an any reason.
Any reason.
Well, I meant any. That's supposed to be any reason or relationship involving custody.
You have to have child.
One or the other.
A reason or a relationship involving custody or responsibility for a student. The reason has to pertain to
a student.
To a student.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's an unlawful reason involving a student. My wife's got custody of the kids and I get there and work in our school and take them to it.
And you've got written permission.
Well, from the administrator, but I don't have the right to take the kids.
Well, that's not the administrator's problem, though, and that you're not going to reach that kind of a problem with your loitering statute anyway. If you're talking about a custody problem between you and your wife, or some reason, some other criminal activity that might be committed, taking away a parent from a child,
no,
something like that.
I don't know, that was just an example, but I can have a relationship with a child that's unlawful with written permission.
Sure, because for the purposes of this statute, if the permission has been granted for you to be there, as insofar as controlling the conduct on the school grounds, you've accomplished that. And if you turn out to be a bad actor, then that's another problem, it seems to me.
Well, you're past
it. Yeah.
I think this is something we've got to make the best stand we can at writing a constitutional law, knowing that there's a damn good chance we can't, but let's try.
I think that's
well, that was precisely the view of the subcommittee. Let's try and hope that it'll be constitutional. But constitutionality, and we hope that the laws that we propose to the legislature will be upheld. That can't, I don't think, particularly in an area like this, be your only consideration. You have to try to make the Constitution.
Yeah.
But you want to also have some tool that's going to be effective from a law enforcement standpoint. And you could have, we could write a statute that would clearly be constitutional, but it wouldn't be worth a hill of beans as far as controlling the problem.
Yeah, we can make them wrong. Be there possessing marijuana.
In light of that, is there any proposal?
Move to adopt it.
Second?
Do you want to just pin down that near?
I'd say within a quarter of a mile.
Remains in or within 1/4 of a mile of?
The outside boundary of the premises of the school.
Well,
I think
there are
serious blocks. Well, the reason why I think from block to block
is because they don't have any blocks.
Yeah, I'm thinking about Ainsworth School in one direction. There's no blocks measured on Montgomery there.
I believe you know the residents across the street from the school. And wife's brother-in-law is hanging around.
They've got the authority to give them permission.
We went through this thing.
Or there's a city park within 1/4 of a mile.
We spent 5 minutes
on the water to heat the city park.
The physical situation is such that every school is different.
you want to protect, for instance, a bus parking lot, it may be two blocks away from school.
Many instances could be a mile.
Right.
Well, yeah, now they can probably get too far, but we finally settled again on this objective selective approach.
Yeah, they're mine, all right.
Well, it's near unduly vague, though, by not pinning it down.
We used some other words, too, but we can't back to near again.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
The New York statute, Lloyd Union School Building, reads any person, not the parent or legal guardian of a pupil in regular attendance at said school, who loiters in or about any school building, et cetera.
Grounds, if it's building.
Building or grounds.
Or is in or about any school buildings or grounds.
Right.
Now, that was construed in the case of People versus Sproul in 1966, which two defendants were arrested, one who was on the grounds, the other who was 300 feet from the edge of the school property. And they upheld the conviction of the party who was on the grounds and reversed as to the person who was 300 feet from the edge of the school property.
I think the guy that's 300 feet from the edge is about a danger. I think the guy that's 300 feet away is as much a danger.
More a danger.
Yeah.
Inner about ground.
Yeah, that was the inner about thing. That's what we originally had.
Yeah.
So it changed from near.
I don't think you get much more specific.
There's
too much variance between facilities. We looked at in the vicinity of also as a possible name. That was one better in the air.
Yeah, and we finally settled, after we talked about New York, we finally settled on this, which is really closer to Michigan's, but they use in or remains in or about.
Well,
and that's the only change we made from the Michigan draft. We put near instead of.
Couldn't we object to having a commentary say that we felt that near was 1,321 feet was not near, but 1,320 was?
Couldn't did they reverse that into the guy that was 1,300 feet away from me or whatever it was? On the basis of constitutionality?
That he went, that about was unduly vague?
Dave, did you fellows give any thought to something like this? I don't know if it could be done. But in or within 300, 500, 600 feet of the school or grounds, unless the place where such person is happens to be a residence or a park, or a place where people are permitted to be. See, build an exception into it to take care of those areas where there might be a residence, there might be a park, there might be something else, a little store.
Well, actually, nearby, though, might be even further than that in some instances.
Pardon?
300 feet might not be far enough. In some instances, it might be.
Well, we have to be arbitrary anyway.
Well, some distance, but the point of Tony's question is to try to describe any exceptions.
Yeah. Here are the school buildings and grounds, and we'll say here's a street, and there happens to be some residences here.
Which there usually are.
Yeah.
You're not talking about Treasure Valley and the house across the street, are you?
No. And here is a park. And here's a little grocery store here. So you say within 300 feet, unless with the place where that person is staying within that 300 feet or whatever the distance is a residence or the yard of the residence or a park or a public place.
But then would it be in there so that in case they're using those places to then contact somebody in the school, that still ought to be against.
Yeah.
Park is going to create more problems than any of
them. The grocery store, the next
local problems.
That's true. Yeah. It seems to me that maybe we could write in an exception of some sort.
The candy store where they sell pop and you don't know what the hell else they sell.
Cigarettes, at least.
Could we build in authority in the statute to let the school administrator designate a restricted area around the individual school?
Well, I think that would be a proper delegation of power because the standard would be the protection of these students and so on.
Well, I think that would be the way to do it, to build in a delegation and let the individual school set up a perimeter.
Yeah, Dave?
Prison statute 166060 uses the language willfully loiters about any public or private school building or the public premises adjacent thereto. That's existing law. And we didn't feel like it was much better than just near or in the vicinity of the top.
See, most schools in the next block may have a park right next to them, too.
Well, it's also going to have a lot of problems.
Yeah.
Is it was private or option?
Yeah. Sure.
Block. Every night,
yeah.
Really
yeah. Yeah.
And that's an ideal place for someone who's environmental lawyer school.
The Pop and Pot Shop across the street.
Yeah.
Pop and Pot?
The Pot Shop.
Pop and Pot Shop. Pop and Pot Shop.
Well, maybe there isn't any way to get there from here. I think we should do something.
Yep. I would.
Question?
Think maybe they wrote it about as good as.
I do, yeah. Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion?
Only along the line that perhaps you should put in school administrator for defining the person who's authorized. So it's a question.
Well, I don't think that that would work, because in some cases, obviously, it should be, or the parent should be one of them, rather than the school administrator.
Well,
this says anyone authorized, we run into the same thing again. Maybe the superintendent gives someone the authority to grant that.
All right.
Basketball game at night.
Yeah.
You mean, in order to go to Lincoln High School to go to a basketball game, I have to have written permission?
That's right.
I'll give it to you, though, if you want it.
You're not authorized to grant it.
I'll give it to you. We'll argue about the authorization later.
Now, say that again. Would this require written permission from somebody to go to a basketball game?
Yes, it would.
Lawyering?
No.
Basketball.
Remain, it's disjunctive and not having.
You're not loitering.
Any person who remains in a school without written permission.
Yeah.
Well.
This is one of those things that's
highly subjective and very selective.
If you take money to get a game, that's permission to get in there.
Yeah.
Not in the discretion of the police.
What if you make it in the disjunctive or written permission?
Well, then we're back with the trouble of the superintendent or whatever he was writing about.
Right, that they can always come up with some kind of an excuse or.
Yeah, we're not going to get by the legislature with one that requires written permission to go to a basketball game.
Mr. Chairman,
of course, I suspect that you're actually paying 2 bits to the school for a ticket that's giving you permission.
But what if you don't buy the ticket until you get on the ground and you get arrested before you get the ticket?
Well, now this thing has got to be highly selective, and it's here for the purpose of having something for catching a bum.
That's right.
And they're not going to catch me going down getting my kids or going to a basketball game or anything. I don't like the idea of technically being guilty of what says the crime, but I think the benefits are worth it.
But we say loiters or remains. Now, it's not just me there, it's to remain there.
Or, either one.
Yeah, I know, it says or. Loiter or remain.
I'm remaining here.
So, I mean, it would seem to me that the courts would look at that and say, well, if you meant just simply the fact of just like somebody walking in before they can get to the ticket booth, or they're going to go in to get permission to stay there, walking into the school office and they're arrested before they get 5 feet inside the door, that certainly wouldn't be either loitering or remaining.
Well then you mean every basketball guest has to go through and get permission, is what you're saying?
No.
What's wrong with striking?
I don't think so.
You remain at a game, Frank, don't you?
Not after.
No, but after it starts.
You'll restart loitering.
Well, my understanding was the same as Jernstead's. You can go to a ball game and there'll be no problem. You don't have to have that written permission. It's only if you stay there after that game is over and you're supposed to leave.
But then wouldn't you be loitering? Why couldn't we strike or remain? What's so important about remaining?
I think that's an approach to it. Your lawyer.
Yeah.
Your loitering is what we're after. Not
it's not just the being there, just walking up and walking in.
Yeah, but then you come to this point, the person commits the crime of loitering and he loiters.
That's
all right. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's your definition. All
right. Well, could we. Let me throw something up. Move to strike.
I'm about to throw something up too.
All together.
Don't think that aloud.
Alright. Well, you go ahead. I'll wait and see what you're going to say first.
Strike the words or like or remain and get an expression from the commission so that it can be placed in the commentary or at least be in the legislative history, that the act buying an admission ticket to a school
athletic function.
That's play
or some such thing as that.
School activity.
Constitutes implicitly, at least, a written permission.
Of course.
I mean, I think that this is one of those kind of cases, like Bruce says, if it goes up, the court's going to look to see if the good, potential good outweighs the potential harm. And I think they're going to look very carefully at our discussions today and what our legislative intent was before they arbitrarily decide that this guy that went there for a basketball game was outside the statute. So if we could get this consensus that that type of person isn't
Wallace.
Covered.
This is kind of dangerous because in Salem, the problems come at the boys who come back and go to basketball games and buy tickets. In other words, I'd rather have us not try to say the basketball games and play some wrestling. I understand what Sam Brent is saying, but once we get into that never-never land, our problem today, although we're catching up with Portland, has been the rowdyism connected with dances where you buy tickets. Ball games and so on, where if the ticket itself constitutes permission, then we've lost one of the great benefits, at least in Salem at the moment.
Well, okay. Does everybody feel that when you buy a ticket, or maybe you have a season ticket students do for basketball games and so on, basketball games, school activity, dance, or anything else, does everybody agree that they should have a right to go to those functions, and it's only if they remain afterward that the what we're trying to restrict. Is that correct?
The problem, of course, is not the student. The school can control the student very well.
No, I mean the other one.
Yeah, it's a former student.
I didn't mean the students, I mean the other.
Hangers on.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
I think you're right.
Disorderly conduct would take care of tickets causing rowdyism to the dance and things of this sort. You wouldn't necessarily have to proceed under the lottery statute.
No.
Disorderly conduct.
We're trying to dress up a legal language. Put it in that language almost, and that'll get the thing across.
I second your
motion. Mr. Chairman, we talked about this language, a specific or other specific legitimate reason for being there, that Michigan and New York both. I think the feeling in the subcommittee was, well, who's going to decide that it's a legitimate reason?
Jury.
You know, who's going to
decide? How about putting a defense in here that is affirmative defense? If a guy can prove that he's related to a child and had the business of getting him, or something else like that.
Or that he had a specific legitimate reason for being there. I don't see anything wrong with those
Well,
words.
The only time this is ever going to come up is when the principal or somebody says to a person, why are you here? And he says, well, I'm not going to hang around. He says, you have written permission. And he says, no, I don't have to have it. It's a public building. And so it's a law here that says you do have to, and the call police can unless you do.
Yeah, but I'm thinking about maybe making it more constitutional if you apply it to everybody on the face of it, but give a defense for those that can prove. They've got a legitimate reason.
What if you had a good dope pusher that had a kid in school? He'd have a legitimate reason to be there.
What about writing letters
to
presidents of Oregon or your state and Portland State and
school
districts, seeing what they think?
Well, this isn't a problem. This isn't the kind of problem that they're having on the college campuses. This is the high school and the junior high is where you've got these kind of problems. That's what we're trying to get at.
Well, Don, let me ask you, in response to Bruce's suggestion, what do you think of writing in a defense here? Wouldn't it help it some? Roger, I take it you don't think so.
I'm not too enthusiastic about it. I'll tell you this. I think that we've got to give the school administrator, that principal, authority to say, get off these premises. You don't have any reason to be here. And the reason you don't have any reason to be here is because I said you don't. You don't have my written permission to be here. And anything, I think if you go beyond that, I think you're right back where you started.
I didn't think that my suggestion about defense would go beyond that. It would give them the right to arrest. The guy wouldn't be convicted if he could prove that he had a good reason. But it would apply to everybody, and in that way, I wouldn't be violating the law because I know I've got a defense when I go down and get my grandchild at the schoolhouse. But if I looked like I was a dope pusher, he could come out and pinch me.
And you would want to make the written permission part of the defense?
Not necessarily. I'm just trying to make this thing make sense for the selectivity.
Well, I didn't feel there'd be any constitutional problem on subsection 1, because in the commentary, page 42 to 45, cites a number of Supreme Court state cases construing statutes with almost identical language, and they've never found any problem.
How about that 1,300 foot?
That was one case, but they didn't feel that the statute extended, really. I think it didn't extend off the school grounds proper.
I see.
Yeah, that wasn't a constitutional grounds.
No, they just, statutory construction, that it didn't extend beyond the grounds of the school.
Well, I think that is the, where the big problem is, with people hanging around not on the school grounds.
So did Mr. Blanchard.
Well, I think we got to pass it.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Williams, so often we mention police discretion and also district attorney's discretion, and hopefully the courts and the juries good judgment. I think particularly in this kind of statute, we have to have some faith in the application of it. And if we're ever in the game place, we don't.
Well, sure. And how many parents have ever been arrested under 166060?
None.
All right, I'll move to strike the words or remain.
Why?
For the reason that Tom O'Dell
doesn't have any
brought up.
That's good.
To make it clear that we're getting at the loiterer, right? All in favor of the motion to strike the words, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried. And do I have a motion to pass the section of the amendment?
So moved.
Second.
Move the second amendment.
The whole section or the subsection?
That rule. Section 6 be approved as amended. Any further discussion?
Nope.
Okay, all in favor of the aye, the nay, call, move, close, no.
Green.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Chan.
Aye.
Clark.
Aye.
Frost.
Aye.
Jernstead.
Aye.
O'Dale.
Aye.
Nye.
Aye.
Spalding.
Aye.
Young.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman.
Aye.
Jeez. Section 7.
I go on.
Got provision?
When I went to school, I just wanted to get permission.
Yeah. Put up your hand.
You want to take a little recess? All right, let's take a little recess.
Northwest Bell is present in the room today, and he doesn't want to speak or anything, but is observing our session, and I would imagine we'll like to chat to the individual members as time permits.
Well, we certainly welcome you, but are you loitering?
You better be careful.
We have written, where's Hoffrich?
I couldn't answer that today.
Well, he's the, I want you to tell him that from now on, we want him to accompany you.
I got both checked in that.
Right, written permission.
What's this about sandwiches? Did you order just
those grillings? Are really messy.
You see those sandwiches?
Yeah,
good.
Great. Yeah, good.
Pickles and all that stuff.
Yeah,
all the good parts.
So everybody is amenable to ham and cheese again.
Right.
Fine. How about French fries?
They're fattening.
They're hard on the draft.
Fattening. They stain our work all the
time. Coca-Cola's and ham and cheese.
Okay. Grill them.
Now we're going to adjourn at 1:30. Is there any objection? Don may have a little objection, but circumstances are such that...
Well, we'll be through section 9, great, we've been going this morning.
All right, now let's kind of hurry this up. Clark, get going. Number 7, explain it. Section 7.
Explained.
Yeah.
Yeah, we spent some time in the subcommittee saying how to pronounce the word.
Harassment.
No, I was persuaded that it was harassment.
Good.
I don't like it.
It's harassment.
Yeah.
That's a sophisticated pronunciation, though.
I'm going to support this because nobody explained it to me that way before.
Explained, yeah.
Explained.
Okay, a person commits a crime of harassment, harassment, if with intent to harass, annoy, or alarm another person, he subjects another to offensive physical contact, or publicly insults another by abusive or obscene words or gestures in a manner likely to provoke a violent or disorderly response, or three, communicates with a person anonymously or otherwise by telephone, mail, or other form of written communication in a manner likely to cause annoyance or alarm, or four, engages in a course of conduct that alarms or seriously annoys another person and which serves no legitimate purpose.
Yeah.
Might add the word bugs.
Aren't one and two covered under by disorderly conduct?
That is all better.
Four is covered by intoxication.
This is supposed to be a private crime as opposed to a public crime, as disorderly conduct would be.
Well, disorderly conduct, intent to annoy, I think that was adequate sufficient.
Well, two is identical to subsection 3 of section 4. Right? Mm-hmm. You're the chairman of the subcommittee.
He's a ranking member.
What is it?
He's a ranking member.
Jim? John? What's right?
Sub 3 of section 4 on page 18 says uses abusive or obscene language or makes an obscene gesture in a public place.
Intent to cause public inconvenience, public annoyance, or public
harm.
And
here it says if he publicly insults another by an obscene gesture.
Well, it would seem the same to me.
I move to strike sub 2.
You've heard the motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Wait a minute.
Okay, go ahead.
Section 4?
Page 8, please. 3.
Well, there's a different intent.
Oh, there's a different intent. That's an intent.
Public inconvenience or just the
this is to cause private. This is directed at one person, one individual, rather than
how can
an intent
to another,
with the intent to harass, annoy, or alarm another person.
Why
a person?
Why public? It must be in the public. Outside.
But the intent doesn't necessarily be to cause public inconvenience.
Yeah.
Just one person.
It occurs in public, but it's directed at
one
a single
person.
Individual.
Yeah.
You mean that section 7 occurs in public?
7-2.
Under sub-2.
7-2, yes.
Oh, yeah. But 7-2.
Public insults.
But not necessarily designed with the intent of creating annoyance to a whole bunch of people. One guy.
I'd be guilty of that sub 3 every day.
Communicates with a person anonymously or otherwise.
Or I know the other every day. Page 4.
Both annoyance and alarm.
Yeah, that's true. Communicates with a person by telephone, mail, or other form of written communication.
Don't we
in a matter of cause annoyance.
Yeah, maybe he should be annoyed.
Sure.
And they're signing here.
Yeah. We have, and we will come to it, defenses against privacy of communications, which when I read this, I felt pretty much protected people and that doing that substitute wasn't needed.
I don't think so.
Well, this is the obscene telephone call, not here.
Not picking up and making it.
It doesn't say
not
so.
Wiretapping.
This isn't the. No, it doesn't say that.
Section 3 doesn't say
that. Yeah, I know it.
You don't harass a person by intercepting
his
phone.
I see.
Yeah, that deals with the bugging and interception. Yeah, that's
what type of thing.
Now, I should mention, subsection 1 would be similar to our simple A and B now, assault and battery. Under our assault draft now, remember, for the crime of assault, you're going to need a physical injury. This does not require a physical injury. So this would be a misdemeanor type of assault and battery situation.
Oh, assault and battery doesn't hurt you.
Well, there's no physical injury. But there is physical contact. Right. Well, that might get the instigator at the altercation before he breaks the guy's nose or his glasses.
I just feel like all these sections are covered elsewhere.
Well, I don't think they are, Tom. I move with approve section 7.
Second.
First, there was a motion made and seconded to delete sub 2. Do you wish to withdraw that?
Well, I want to be absolutely certain that it isn't covered and that we're. I'm not satisfied we have a sufficient amount of discussion on it.
But if you read section 4, you'll see that there's a different intent required there from what we require under section 7.
Now,
because there we're talking about public inconvenience or annoyance or alarm.
But here you've got the element of publicly insults another, don't you?
Yeah, but publicly insulting him, telling him that he's a poo-poo. Yeah, but your intent element is an intent to harass, annoy, or alarm another person.
Yeah.
Not
in a manner likely to, in other words, cause a fight. A violent, disorderly response.
Well, do we have anything in the present law that even approximates this? I looked at those four or five here, and the one on the phone call is there, 165, 550. But the others don't. Seems to me that 1, 2, and 3 go a little far beyond this specific. For instance, 166.030 says you can't make fun of a guy because he won't enter into a duel. Now, perhaps that ought to be removed entirely. So, aren't we going a lot further than we do anyplace else in the law?
Number one, we've taken care of an assault and battery, but there is this silly assault and battery that doesn't hurt anybody that would come under this if it's supposed to come under anything.
Well, how about the guy who goes around in crowds just purposely bumping into people and
pinching
and grasping them?
Well, it's called frottage in the psychology books,
and maybe we ought to make that a separate crime.
Frottage?
F-R-O-T-T-A-G-E. Call it
tweaks.
Bumps into people in elevators and places like that.
Well, we've got, when I was sheriff, we had cases where guys would hide down behind a petition and reach out and grab people's ankles as they went by.
Well, there's different ways to get your gang thing.
Mr. Chairman, does this public, number two, under publicly insults, would that take care of somebody that, if I had Dave Frost in my own home and he harassed me, is he taken care of here?
No, he isn't. No, you got to be big enough to throw him out and then have him stand on the lawn and shout it.
That's why I'm eating all these donuts, okay.
I'm also not persuaded, Don, that the way you drafted sub 3 is superior to the telephone statute that we have now. I think it's a very important statute. Well, it's a long statute. It says any person who by means of telephone communication, and then it has four subsections, makes any comment. Well, let me show you. It's short long.
Yeah.
You had to defend him?
No, Dave wrote one of his first cases.
You call up plenty of clients and you say, the arresting was charged with disorderly, he just got sued for alienation of affection.
Well, I was trying to ask you a question, I was trying to say, did you disorderly conduct or something?
Well, you did, then you had, you did it with, did to harass. You're guilty of crime.
If you're.
You write a letter to some guy who probably paid you. And you say, well, now look here, you deadbeat, you're nothing but a so-and-so. Well, he deserves to be annoyed. And actually, that does annoy him, and it's done with that intent.
Ah, but no, but it's not done with that sole intent.
Of course, the two people actually against you and pass for
trade. Well, there's the intent's getting paid the bill.
Suppose you've written to him 10 times since the 11th letter. And you've written it off.
Written it off, you're wasting your time to write a lot of letters.
All right, but if you do, aren't you with to harass him or annoy him?
You've got a legitimate purpose.
Yeah, that number 3 is an important deal. I wonder if any men are likely to cause annoyance or alarm in school bay.
I think it is.
This old 550
was pretty here. What would happen if we just dropped this whole section? Would we lose very much?
Yeah, you'd lose obscene phone calls. Yeah,
well, I
and a lot of those in Portland.
Yeah, we want to retain that.
I think I'd move to or my sentiments would be to drop the section except to recodify the existing 165-550 statute.
What's the verbiage there?
Well, here it is. Pacific Northwest Bell, and they all worked hard on getting that through the legislature. The prosecutors have had good success with that statute, and I think it should be kept as it is.
Well, we're going to have the Casper Milk Toast come down and work hard to get the sections 1 and 2 through the legislature sometime to preserve it.
Oh, I don't know. Someone goes like this to hear what the other is.
If you were raised like I was, you wouldn't know what those things mean. Like you. So they wouldn't annoy you.
Sure. Well, as long as there are salt and battery, doesn't.
I mean, it seems the only reason we're keeping the other is because the phone company worked hard on it.
Isn't the salt and battery?
No, there's a lot of effort put into making
it. Well, Louisiana State
Attorney. John, couldn't you recodify this and also include anonymous mail?
It's the kind I get sometimes. It's pretty harassing.
Well, now we're going to cover a lot of the anonymous mail under the obscenity statute. You see.
Well, what about these ones that you get, and all it does is have something that's the little deal says your neck, and there's the crosshairs of the gun sight.
It's not obscene.
No, but it causes alarm.
You bet your life.
Well, I don't know either. I've never
gotten
one.
But,
yeah, I have.
I'd pretend that I'd had a quick machine to put one of those neck seals on.
I don't like it any better.
I think those ought to be covered.
Now, the basis for this section comes from the Model Penal Code initially, and they have the section on harassment. It's a petty misdemeanor. And it covers if he makes a telephone call without purpose of legitimate communication, or insults, taunts, or challenges another in a manner likely to provoke violent or disorderly response, or makes repeated communications anonymously or at extremely inconvenient hours, or in offensively coarse language, or subjects another to offensive touching, or engages in any other purpose of alarming conduct serving no legitimate purpose of the actor. And New York, I think ours are probably
resembling. You like that?
Subsection 2 is a modified version of the Model Penal Code, and the other 3 subsections are from the New York Revised Penal Law.
I tell you, petting would be out on the Oregon State campus past that sub 4.
Engages
Who's alarmed?
That served a legitimate purpose.
What's that? Yeah, what's a smell?
At least it used to.
Don't know about now.
I don't know, Senator Burns, but
very useful purpose.
You gotta be delicate.
Well, then we probably should throw in the 3-year limitation, shouldn't we? I mean, the 3-year.
3 years difference.
Yeah.
I think it's 6 months.
Well, put it on signs, if they're both drawn on the same sign.
Well, I'm inclined to think that the written communication should be kept in there, but.
Well, I think sub one ought to be kept in there too, because I don't think we have any, we don't have that covered.
Yeah, simple assault.
Right. What's happened to assault and battery?
Well, now our assault draft requires a physical injury for the commission of an assault.
Mm-hmm.
What is a physical injury?
Well, we define that.
But this would do is cover the simple assault.
Got a result.
When it comes to doctor bill, at least $10.
Got a result.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
Who's the chairman of that subcommittee?
On assault and battery?
No, on this.
Judge Burns.
Representative Frost is the ranking member of the committee.
I'd like to hear from Representative Frost. I think he has.
I was reminded of this. Bruce is coming to the day that you can't be perfume left his coming. Twice the whole song.
That's pretty good.
Well, did Senator Burns motion have a second?
Well, I didn't make it in the form of a motion. I was very careful.
Question on the adoption of section 7.
Now, physical injury means impairment of physical condition or substantial pain, is the way we define that term.
What was it again?
Impairment of physical condition or substantial pain.
Oh, I don't think it's broad enough then. What about the guy grabbing ankles?
Right here. Well, that's why we had this subset.
Oh, I see.
All right, is it satisfactory if we retain sub 1 and ask Don to rewrite sub 4 so that it will in effect recodify 165-550?
You know, I agree with Mr. O'Dell, who says that we either ought not to pass any of it or we ought to keep the whole darn thing.
Well, we certainly need 4 and we
3
and 1.
We don't need 1. It's not 4, it's 3.
I mentioned 4. I meant 3. Done. 1 and 3.
1 and 3.
Well, maybe the constitutional way to get at this would be to put the question on agreeing to the whole section, and if that goes down, I'll try to.
Very well. Right. Call roll on adopting it as it is.
Senator Burns?
No.
Carson?
Nope.
Chandler? Aye. Clark? Aye.
Frost? Aye. Jernstead?
Aye.
O'Dell?
Aye.
Knight?
Aye.
Spaulding?
No.
Young?
No.
Mr. Chairman?
No.
Section 8.
This
is one we'll stir you up.
Oh, the swastika in the synagogue section. There's not much I can say to you about this. It's self-explanatory, I believe.
I think the malicious destruction statute covers it. I think we're perpetuating the statute.
Well, I don't think so. No, because think malicious destruction requires some damage, and this. The damage is pretty, it can be removed, but it's still pretty offensive.
I think it's pretty important.
We've got a whole batch of statutes on the books now.
Mr. Chairman, I move approval of Section 8.
Very good. Second.
Heard the second. Any further discussion? Call the roll.
Yo.
Carson.
Oh, aye.
Chandler.
Aye.
Clark.
Aye.
Frost.
Aye.
Jernstead?
Aye.
O'Dell?
Aye.
Knight?
Aye.
Spaulding?
Aye.
Young?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye.
How do you abuse a corpse?
Section
9.
The Undertaker's star. There are.
There
was a limerick. Wasn't it? You don't call me Dave.
They are. Just let the minute stop at that point.
After 3 years, I'm beginning to realize how Bob Chandler feels.
Now, abuse is defined under Section 1. To mean means to deface, damage, defile, or otherwise physically mistreat in a manner likely to outrage ordinary public sensibility.
Chairman, I move you approve Section 1.
Second?
Let's take a look at it.
What was that definition?
Under Section 1 of your draft, that's...
I would only inquire, do we have statutory authority for disinterment for job absolution?
Yeah.
Is this included?
Yeah, this doesn't reach...
Is this discretionary?
Except as otherwise authorized by law. This is to take care of a legitimate... Well,
you don't need a court order like you do in Massachusetts.
Reading that uses definition again.
Means to deface, damage, defile, or otherwise physically mistreat in a manner likely to outrage ordinary public sensibility.
Which one is that?
The definition of abuse. Abuse. Sanctity of marriage. Public sensibility, those are the sensibilities of the public.
Things that would ordinarily disturb most people, or just...
Yeah. Most people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't bother necrophiles, but...
Call the roll.
Sindergren?
Aye.
Carson?
Aye.
Chandler?
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Jernstead?
Aye.
O'Dell?
Aye.
Nye?
Aye.
Spaulding?
Aye.
Young?
I just don't like being a knee-jerk.
Aye.
Boy, you can see the voters lurking behind that series of votes.
Section 10.
Cruelty to animals.
Substantial change from existing law.
Is a range cow under human custody under sub 1?
Sure.
She's worth $200 or more in Eastern Oregon.
How about the cockfighting?
How about spurring your horse?
There's a case in the commentary on something like that. Page 61.
The state, they wouldn't say that spraying a horse is cruel mistreatment.
Necessary.
Get his attention. Yeah, we noted in the commentary that we didn't attempt to define an animal because that is something else to try to define what you mean by an animal. But it includes domestic and pet animals and birds. So in answer to your question, it would include chickens.
Who says it is it defined? Well, where do you
I told you chicken inquiry subcommittee the other night what was going to happen as a result of this whole business that the governor was going to have to appoint none of the criminal
Court of Appeals,
because he's the only guy who's going to know what the new statutes mean.
Yeah, right.
Well,
remember,
in the old cruelty to animal statute, it said cruelly abandoned or something like that.
Or mistreats.
Yes, but I'm wondering if this includes abandonment.
That would be mistreatment.
Well, subjects any animal,
wait a minute,
to cruel neglect.
Don, would you abolish the definition of animal in 772.10?
No, I'm not proposing to fuss with that.
It includes all brute creatures. Does your wife ever call you a brute?
Yes.
Yeah.
She's called me a chicken.
Chairman, I move approval of Section 10.
Second. Motion's been made and seconded. Discussion. Call the roll.
Sindergren?
I will vote aye.
Carson?
Aye.
Chandler?
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Frost?
Aye.
Jernstead?
Aye.
O'Dell?
Aye.
Knight?
Aye.
Spaulding?
Aye.
Young?
Aye.
Mr. Chair? Sherman?
Aye. The sheep herder is going to be unhappy. Section 11.
You write an exception until it will help it.
That was under the sex crime section.
You want an affirmative defense?
Wait, crazy fool, that's the worst of you in the band.
If it's consensual.
Consensual, not just plain sensual.
At what age does a you become an adult?
Okay, what's that old gag? The guy invited the girl out for a four-course lamb dinner. She wanted to know what that was, and he says, "That's three martinis and a piece of you."
Is that on the record? Everything's on the
record. Dave Dunaway will go crazy.
Don Paylette said that. Section 11.
You know, this guy in the comic ground, it's kind of interesting to note there are only three reported Oregon cases involving cruelty to animals, and two of them are against the same guy. 3 years apart. He must have been a real baddie.
Or must have been in Multnomah County?
Well, this is
West Bend, Eastern Oregon.
Oh, the
cow and a horse.
He's trying to find his place again.
All right, section 11.
Yes, Don.
My name's Don Wetton. I don't care what I say.
You just lost that appointment. Goodbye.
Falsely reporting an incident. A person commits the crime of falsely reporting an incident if he intentionally initiates or circulates a report, knowing it to be false, concerning an alleged or impending fire, explosion, crime, catastrophe, or other emergency, under circumstances causing or likely to cause public inconvenience or alarm. So, really amounts to an aggravated form of disturbing the peace.
I think this is a very necessary and important step.
I move to approve it. Second? Is that a call for the question? Call roll.
Sandra Bennett?
Aye.
Carson?
Aye.
Chandler?
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Frost?
Aye.
Jones Cat? Aye. Knight?
Aye.
Fowler? Yeah.
Aye.
Mr. Church?
Never
in a long time. You worked on that text
draft, you lost it. Finally snapped.
Instead of walking and telling jokes to vote for.
Offenses.
Mr. Chairman, we have the appendix here dealing with the crime of treason that I mentioned yesterday.
Mr. Chairman, I move we delete the appendix.
Second.
Now, I've got quite a bit of commentary set out there on this, mainly just to show you what has taken place not only in this state but elsewhere with respect to the crime of treason. And the reason I laid it before the commission was because of the provision in the Oregon Constitution. And this is, the purpose of this was just really to preserve the statutory crime of treason. And it really is pretty much just a restatement of what appears in the Constitution.
Well, what about the statutes you have listed there?
Now, those are our existing treason statutes.
How does this differ from other statutes?
Well, it differs.
I have a lot of
versions. I ain't come right around saying that a bunch of liberals up there did away with treason as a crime in this state. Bad enough to do away with all these sex crimes we did away with.
Touch treason,
could you? Yes, in the Bill of Rights, we have a provision that every person should have the right to overthrow the government.
Federal law, that's something
you know that.
Change the form of
by,
government. People have the right to change their form of government by whatever means they see fit.
Commission of violence.
Is that right?
Yeah. This is the thing of the
constitutional revision commission that changed a few years ago, but some of the senate would go on.
Yeah, man, it may be.
I was on your side.
We're a bunch of.
Fuzzy head.
In all the states, over the last 100 years, or what, no cases or two cases or something?
That's what we're gonna come up with.
John, how do you figure this?
It's just a lot of wasted paper, and you have to teach people a lot of it in school, and, you know.
See, 162.010 defines treason, Mr. Chairman.
I'm trying to think that. It's not hurting anything, I think we ought to leave it in there, I think it'd be in bad. There would be a bunch of fuzzy liberals that made it okay to commit.
Doesn't do anything except take up paper and cost the state money to print it.
We've got a lot, look what a small amount it is. If that's your, is that your only objection?
Well, it's absolutely useless, and it makes a mockery out of the law.
What would happen?
This won't be the first mockery of the law this commission's committed.
What would happen if this code lived for 100 years, as we hope it would? And somehow or other, the government in the United States collapsed, and we were set back into the government of the 50 states.
But they can pass a statute for treason then.
Well, this way we'd already have it.
I think it's possible it could occur.
I think, I'm inclined to think that it served a very good purpose to keep it. Bob, you're right, it doesn't mention violence, it's actually a discussion we had. People shall at all times have the right to alter, reform, or abolish the government.
And the governor has to declare martial law, and you don't know what. You've got it covered 100 different ways. Who is going to address something?
Oh, no, people voted by a majority vote to shoot the governor, all the legislators had the right to it.
Yes. Is there a second to Don's motion that this be deleted? Motion dies for want of a second.
Will we approve the appendix?
It's all you did. All right, motion's been made to approve, it's been seconded, any discussion?
What about the language, or upon confession in open court? And that might be.
That's constitutional language.
That's what the Constitution says, and that's old type language.
Yeah, Article 1, Section 24, treason against the United States, against the states, excuse me, shall consist only of levying war against it, or adhering to its enemies, giving them aid or comfort. No person shall be convicted of treason unless on the testimony of two witnesses to the same overt act or confession in open court.
Who are its enemies? California land grabbers, that's who I
see. Well, I've got a few other ideas. But we don't know. This is an extreme emergency.
Well, no, enemies. First of all, you have to have a wartime situation. I think you have treason. You have to have an enemy in war.
That's as soon as Kid Oregon was warring with the state of California.
You know, warring with the fact that he was in the state. Like that. A minute, man.
I'm not
at all. Yeah. I'm not so sure we don't have a good slug up in my part of the country.
Okay, there's a motion been made seconded to approve treason.
Not of treason.
To approve the section on treason. All in favor, say aye.
Sandra Burns.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Candler.
Aye.
Clark.
No.
Cross.
Aye.
Jersey.
Aye.
O'Dell.
Aye.
Knight.
Aye.
Spalding.
Aye.
Young.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman.
Aye. We'll have a 5-minute chow break.
Chairman, just for the purpose of treatment of this section now, does the commission have any preference how it's placed in the draft? We just have a section 12, or would you rather have it appear at the beginning of the draft? Any strong feeling one way or another?
I don't think it makes much difference. I think it should be at the beginning, probably.
Yeah, because I had to walk, and I have.
Well, now, is this going to be a petty misdemeanor or a capital offense?
Left from the
Well, it's my prison.
They look at sunshine.
I thought he was shaved out of that.
No, it's like prison.
Don, you're the only one that voted no on that. You want to change your vote?
No.
You pro treason.
There are some places in there. There may be a case where some members of this commission want to burn the minutes. Next election, folks.
But I felt this was in constitution.
Right. Wally Carson, I'm not going to feed his opponent this ammunition, all the things he said here.
I thought he wasn't going to have a phone. You scared him all out then.
Nope, I imagine I'll have one.
Did you get some coats? I just got the one because I had to walk. I don't have my car with me.
Why don't you run the Secretary of State set it up?
That's right.
If I'd had a bucket, I could have managed.
Won't have
a
bread.
Don, get your cup and we'll share this with you. Bring your cup over. No, come on.
I should have got the keys.
No, but David asked for a coat.
Well, I'll share with you.
That's okay. I need the cup. Here's the house.
See, if you want to have that conversation I mentioned last night, some length, bring your kids over skiing tomorrow and Terry Booth will come down to the house. We'll sit there and have a beer and watch a football game and converse before I leave the place.
Take my wife out to sound them better all the time. My wife has to teach in school, so I need that.
Are you married?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I don't bring the commission
initiation this particular last year for the high quality of staff work that this commission has gotten from Don and Roger and Hillard and the rest of them. For an addition on a number of cases like today, the personal courtesies they've shown us are exceptional. And, to a degree, I haven't noted on some other bodies I've been on in this state.
Well, thank you, Bob. I think the whole commission joins you in that sentiment.
No question about that.
Go call for
and question. You have a campaign manager for your appellate court.
You may have a form of motion.
I'm afraid somebody called for the question.
You better do. Which one of you handled meditation?
Well, we went over this just the other night at the meeting of Subcommittee 1. And I imagine John may want to say something on it before we get started on it.
Not really. As I understand it, Don, we're only going to go up to 9 because of the problem with respect to the federal act, right?
Yeah.
But we will go through the first 8 sections, right? Why don't you go ahead and explain?
Subcommittee 1 met on this Thursday night, and at that time our original plan was to begin with section 9 through 8 and go on through 18, which were really the procedural sections of this draft. Roger had drafted to provide a means for obtaining an eavesdropping warrant. We were attempting to pattern those provisions after the New York procedure. But in further checking of the New York statutes, it was discovered that they recently amended their code to provide that number of changes in order to comply with the requirements of the Omnibus Crime Control Bill, which is very explicit and with respect to wiretap. So we didn't have time to change our draft. So we discussed it in the subcommittee and decided that we would go ahead with the substance portion of this with the thought in mind that there are, well, at least 2 alternative ways of dealing with the procedural requirements. The Now, under title 18, chapter 119, wire interception and interception of oral communications, is a statutory law, federal law, that was incorporated in the Omnibus Crime Control Act of 1968. And the way we read this chapter is that the states really have no option on this with respect to requirements that you have to meet for recording of wiretaps and for obtaining authorization to report in the first place. One of the provisions of section 2516 provides that the principal prosecuting attorney of any state or the principal prosecuting attorney of any political subdivision thereof, if such attorney is authorized by a statute of that state to make application to a state court judge of competent jurisdiction for an order authorizing or approving the interception of wire or oral communications, may apply to such judge for, and such judge may grant, in conformity with section 2518 of this chapter, and with the applicable state statute, an order authorizing or approving the interception of wire or oral communications by investigating or law enforcement officers having responsibility for investigation of the offense to which the application is made, when such interception may provide or has provided evidence of the commission of the offense of murder, kidnapping, gambling, robbery, bribery, extortion, or dealing in narcotic drugs, marijuana, or other dangerous drugs, or other crime dangerous to life, limb, or property, and punishable by imprisonment for more than 1 year, designated in any applicable state statute authorizing such interception, or any conspiracy to commit any of the foregoing offenses. Now, it doesn't appear to give you much of an option there. And the way we read it also is that we are going to have to define, assuming that the commission wants to recommend that we have provision for allowing lawful wiretap under limited circumstances to comply with the Omnibus Crime Control Bill. If we do that, then the way we read this statute is that we are going to have to enumerate all of the crimes in this state to which we're going to have them apply. Now, first of all, they're going to have to be a felony when we read this, because because punishable by imprisonment for more than 1 year.
Yeah. But gambling is excluded from that. But gambling could be a misdemeanor gambling statute.
We're not going to, the point is, we're not going to be able to get to this specific thing until the grading subcommittee has graded all the substantive crimes that we've passed upon and made the determination on whether they're going to be felonies and or what, and the commission is approved.
John, when will that start? Have to choose which of those.
This is in effect.
No, no, I mean the grading of our crime.
Don't you think that it's desirable that we limit this to a very few things?
January or February.
Yeah, we should be able to start on next month.
We'll finish everything this month.
Mr. Chairman, I know that there's no provision here for the sale of eavesdropping devices, and I'm concerned that there are catalogs now out and about where you can buy parabolic microphones and all kinds of things for $17.98 and have them mail ordered, or you can buy them at the Oregon Novelty Shop, and the kids all over the place can get them. And they're, I don't think they'd be covered under the possession, because they're not selling them for an illegal purpose.
How about ordinary recording machines, where someone calls you up and you record the telephone deal?
Tape recorder will do it.
Tape recorder.
Yeah, I don't think that...
Tape recorder and induction coil.
I can
do it.
Phone
recorder. You can do it now. It's done every day.
Sure.
Well, there are some devices, however, that have no other legitimate purpose.
How about a microphone? How about a television station wants to listen to the quarterback? They use them all the time. Football games.
That would be
for a specific legitimate purpose, though. I think you could word a statute that they could sell to people who had a lawful use for it, but could not sell to people who did not have a law.
Like a newspaper, so we can bug the courtroom?
The jury room.
The jury room?
So any interstate.
You know, that's provided, like Mike.
What's a parabolic, Mike?
Say, all of those things covered under this big dish shaping thing. Shotgun looking thing sticking out the middle of it, and it'll pick up an ordinary conversation a quarter of a mile away.
Oh, is that how they pick up the quarterback, Barkley?
Well, sometimes they bug him, and sometimes they wire him, but they can also, you see a guy along the sideline every once in a while with a big dish shaped microphone with a shotgun looking thing on the front of it, aiming at the guy, and they'll pick up an ordinary conversation a quarter of a mile away.
Is that right?
Even in traffic. Even in the middle of city streets and things like that.
This is very important. I'm not really concerned as much about the police using these things as I am about the neighbor kids getting them and shooting them up towards your window in your bedroom. I think that's much more of a concern to the public.
That's why I live on a farm.
They get within a half a mile, they probably just go in their farmhouse.
Well, we're going to come to that anyway in the course of these.
Well,
discussion.
We can go, Don, from
one
to
right now. Doesn't exist.
Yes, yeah. We can. Well, we can go ahead with these first eight sections.
Anyway. All right, let's start on.
Okay, Roger.
Section one, I think this time we will look at these two definitions.
You started them.
They're used. They're very important for the other sections. Sub one, conversation means the transmission between two or more persons of a private oral communication, which is not a telephonic, telegraphic, radio, or television communication. And an eavesdropping device means any instrument, device, or equipment designed for, adapted to, or used in wiretapping or mechanical overhearing or recording of a conversation.
A tape recorder is clearly a...
Any device used in bugging or wiretapping, whether for the actual interception or the recording. And conversation will relate to areas of bugging as distinguished from wiretapping.
I read this. Well, the tape recorder is designed for the recording of a conversation, but unless it's adapted to or used in that connection with wiretapping or mechanical overhearing, well, there's no problem.
A tape recorder, just sitting like this one here, although I suppose we argue that our conversations aren't private oral communications, but otherwise you'd have to have the consent of everybody here to run the tape recorder.
Well, of course, these definitions have to be taken in light of the sections defining the crime. Why don't you go on to section two?
On page six. Now, the first part of section two was drafted with the section 9 to 18 in mind, which authorized ex parte orders for intersection communications. Those will be redrafted, but assuming they remain properly the same, will this time being read it as it is. A person commits the crime of eavesdropping if without legal authority granted under section 9 to 18 of this article, meaning if in the absence of a valid ex parte judicial order, he intentionally, one, overhears or records a conversation by means of an eavesdropping device without the consent of all the persons engaged in the conversation. That's what's traditionally been thought of as bugging.
Well, but you're going beyond that. You're taking and you're prohibiting without a warrant, say, a police officer hiding in the restroom where these two guys are going to come in and talk and make their deal. He doesn't have the permission of everybody there, so he's violating the law.
He's overhearing. By means
it
of an eavesdropping device.
Okay, as long as he doesn't use a tape recorder.
Yeah.
That, I mean, in other words, that the most reliable thing would be the
tape recorder, I'd have just rely on the testimony of the officer, the memory of the officer.
Well, if he can hear it, then he can use it with the device.
No, he can't. No, he can't.
He's not overhearing by the device. He's hearing it with his own ears and recording it at the same time. You have no problem.
I don't see it.
For several cases in court.
Well, but I'm being concerned that we're going beyond the cases in court.
This is overhearing by means of an eavesdropping device.
Or recording by means of an eavesdropping device.
No.
Yeah.
Well.
I don't think there's any problem there, Frank.
So long as he hears with his own ears, it doesn't prevent him from
taking better notes.
Clicking on his.
This must be over here with one of Bob Chandler's gadgets.
And that's.
No, he doesn't. He can't plug that into his ear. He's got to run it through an eavesdropping device before he can hear it.
Well, what about what effect would this have, say, on a on an informant carrying a tape recorder and then bringing the tape back to the police?
It could not be done in the absence of a warrant under this section. You cannot record a conversation by means of an eavesdropping device without the consent of all the persons.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
That's the interpretation.
And that's what I mean. Even if the guy is there and hearing it himself, he can't record it.
You can't wire your undercover man for silent, even though he's present and part of the conversation.
Presently, one exception to the Oregon statute allowing the police to do that in narcotics investigations.
Roger, I don't read this section there right. As I read it, it's overhears or records, either way, but it must be by means of an eavesdropping device.
Well, of course, the tape
if you record it, it would be by means of an eavesdropping
device. He's not overhearing by the means, he's hearing it personally. I haven't taken your notes that time by means of recording your device.
You know, just approve the note-taking capacity, as I
my intention.
Yes?
May I just mention something as a practical matter that I think you ought to deal with somewhere or other? And that's in a number of cases where you're dealing with undercover police officers in an undercover operative condition. The officer is wired for sound for his own protection and is being monitored. Now, I've had policemen who've been in the back seats of cars with some people from out of state that had they known who the officer was, he would have been in immediate jeopardy of his life. And the only way we could protect him was that he was wired for sound and it was being monitored by another car who was just a few blocks away all the time. And had he made the necessary statement, that car would have closed in quickly to get him out of there. Now, I think we have to provide for that officer's protection some way.
You weren't intending to limit the existing Oregon law.
Well,
I don't think this is any narrower than.
We're not preventing that. We're just saying that you can't use that evidence in court.
No.
Yeah.
No, you're saying here a person commits a crime by eavesdropping.
Oh, yeah.
He commits a crime if he does this.
Yeah.
Well, there's a long line of present federal cases that allows an undercover man or an informant to, if he is present, part of the conversation, to be wired for sound. This is not an invasion because he's there and can hear it anyway. The only prohibition is against those who can't hear and use the device to overcome that disability. And if this strikes out the ability to wire an informant or a police officer on the company or agent, I said,
your dad was.
Well, back to the drawing board. Subsection 5,
makes an exception to that. Prohibition in paragraph C of subsection 1 do not apply to a law enforcement officer who uses a listening or recording device, machine or apparatus, to obtain a conversation between himself, someone under his direct supervision, and a person whom he has reasonable cause to believe has committed or is engaged in committing a crime involving narcotics or dangerous drugs. So the only exception in the Oregon law is law enforcement officers investigating those particular violations of the law.
Well, I think that's where we use it. In fact, I know it is, but I think it even ought to be brought into the other organized crime areas. Because you put some officer in with a mafia kind of guy, you've got to protect that officer. Those people have the potential of killing him.
Well, we base this upon the New York Code and also Michigan. This wasn't discussed in the subcommittee. Does New York provide any such privileges or immunities for the police officer, Roger? I don't know.
No, because the recent trend in the law is indicated by the Supreme Court. It's very definitely becoming much stricter in this area in requiring search warrants. In the Berger and the Katz case, they brought all types of this type of interception of communications.
Okay, but that's a deal that that's on using the evidence because the method has been obtained and unreasonable under the Constitution, and it's not making it a crime.
Well, it's a crime. This restates Oregon law. The only thing that this does not include is a specific exemption for law enforcement officers in narcotic cases.
Well, it should, and it should go beyond that. I'm not saying that I propose that you allow them to use the evidence. I'm saying that you don't make the police commit a crime by wiring their officer to protect it. And I'll tell you, they will. They'll commit the crime in order to protect the officer. And they should.
Now, we have a section on defenses where that could be included.
Yeah, we have a section on defenses, but that doesn't have that defense in it. We have a public servant defense, but it's performing official duties in compliance with our procedural sanctions, which wouldn't cover the kind of situation.
Well, would you want to renumber this into subsections 1 and 2, and like have the 1, 2, and 3 here, part of sub 1, and then have a sub 2, something to the effect that it is an affirmative defense if a peace officer with permission to court is out.
Well, a police officer can do that now under this section as long as he has a warrant.
But that warrant procedure is a very involved kind of thing.
You have to have it every time.
See, you get something comes up fast, you get a phone call that says, hey, you want to make that buy now, we'll meet you in 5 minutes at so-and-so. Well, you slap some recording device on that officer or a radio equipment, and you have him out there.
Well, wouldn't that be the way to handle it, get the appropriate language and put it in this
You could have it specifically authorized by his commanding officer and the district attorney's office or something like that. But it's got to have some promptness to it or it won't do you any good at all.
Well, why don't we let's see if we can get a consensus with respect to section 2, except for that. If it is, then we could entertain a motion to refer it to the subcommittee for purposes of draft
move we approve section two in principle with the understanding that the subcommittee will add additional language to cover the situations that Mr. Clark and Mr. Knight and Mr. O'Dell have done.
Well, okay. Does that include a situation like an informant who carries a tape recorder when he makes a lie? This would clearly be prohibited under this section. And
in the absence of a warrant.
Yeah.
Except in that one case on narcotics investigations. One of the confusing things about this whole area is that there are a number of things that are against the law that have been practiced on both state and federal level for the last 30 years.
And the courts have all been missing that.
And this sort of thing, every lawyer's office has got one of these gadgets. And they use it with some regularity.
Maybe it's simplifying.
Then that's more reliable when he comes back than just what he tells you.
That's bad.
Well, I don't have any objection to it, although I think it's true. You.
Oh, obscene.
Police stations and jails are exempt from these statutes now. Would that continue to be?
Certainly
bug prisoners
cell.
Well, there's a specific statute exempting them now. I just wonder if this would be.
Well, that wouldn't be changed, would it? For this?
It wouldn't be, unless there's an exemption built in later on.
Yeah. Well, where are the exemptions right here in the present statutes?
Well, Frank, you wanted to relate to informants as well as to police officers.
I think it's more reliable to have a tape recording of what was said than to have the informant come back and just tell you what was said.
Well, now, if you have an informant, though, don't you think the most reliable means of employing his recorded conversation is to get a warrant for that, to go through the warrant? What we're talking about two things. Don Clark has raised the problem of the police officer because of the safety factor, primarily, as I understand it.
That's correct.
Now, if you're setting the guy up for a buy with an informant or whatever, it seems to me that you can go through the warrant procedure, and that it's more in the pursuit of truth. Really, if you require that informant to, go before the judge or whatever you have to do.
Well, of course, you're not in.
So I think.
But here again, we're talking about the same thing that Don says as far as the time goes. If you don't get a warrant in 10 minutes, an hour. This type of thing. It's between 8 and 5, you might be able to get a warrant out in an hour, an hour and a half, couple hours.
What are you going to do in the church county when the judge is chucker hunting?
But in the evening, you've got to get us down, we've got to get your secretary down, then we've got to find the judge. Weekends, getting a search warrant can be a very
you're aware of the time involved, and I know you've taken a night call as many times as I have from the district attorney's office. And 2 o'clock in the morning, the time to travel down there to actually probably type the warrant yourself about a secretary and subject to a trace typographic wire. And then, on top of that, try and wake up the judge and get the sign. By heavens, the best that you can do.
You got to have that officer come in and meet with you to get sign the affidavit and stuff, and
or the judge in the Eastern District taking his mother and dog for a drive.
He has no instant phone, too, so
that's right. There's a gross inconvenience factor.
This sort of thing didn't come up in the subcommittee discussion of it. It's open up to me anyway.
As far as the right of privacy goes, this guy who's taking part in the conversation can go right into court and can testify on it. So as far as any right of privacy being violated, there is none. Why can't he, by means of a tape recorder, record what's being said?
Well, logical distinction.
Yeah, it makes no sense whatsoever.
Do you want to amend Mr. Chandler's motion? As I understand the motion, Mr. Chairman, it was to approve in principle subsection 2, and then to instruct the staff to draw appropriate language which would take in the police officer, the Don Clark rate. I could see no violence to bringing in the informant because it will come back before us in written language, and we'll have another opportunity to evaluate it after we see it.
Yeah, I don't see any wrong with it.
Do you want to make you?
Okay, yeah, all that.
That's what my motion said.
This end of the table decided this language is all right. This end of the table decided that language is all right.
The way it is now?
Yeah.
Well, then you can vote against the motion.
Over here is by means of an eavesdropping device.
No, or
he's committed a crime if he does.
He commits a crime.
My officer will be committing a crime, and so will the officers that were monitoring his conversation.
You're an informant.
How are you going to define an informant?
Would this motion also include extending beyond narcotics?
Yeah.
Emergency situations.
Extending the privilege beyond narcotics.
Covering the officers.
Any criminal activity, any organized crime activity, which also should be covered.
Well, I think implicit in Bob's suggestion is giving a certain amount of leeway to the staff so they can get something down here that we can work with.
Okay.
But
it's in the question.
Is there a second to the motion to amend?
I'll second it if you want.
All right.
Just
and the motion is to approve section 2 as it's drafted with instructions to the staff to draft additional language to bring in police officers and informants and to extend this to different types.
Broaden the present restrictions.
Broaden the present restrictions. Okay, all in favor, say aye if you need your call.
Cinderbury.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Chandler.
Aye.
Clark.
Aye.
Frost.
Aye.
Drinstead.
Aye.
O'Dell.
Aye.
Nye.
Aye.
Spaulding.
Aye.
Young.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman.
Aye. With concern.
I think,
yeah, there are a couple things I might mention here under this Title 18, Section 2511 of Chapter 119. They have one section here. It shall not be unlawful under this chapter for a person acting under color of law to intercept a wire or oral communication, or such party is a party to the communication, or one of the parties to the communication has given prior consent to such interception. And then there's another, then with respect to the provisions for obtaining a warrant, an eavesdropping warrant, they have an exception that allows the emergency situation.
Those could be put in the section 2.
Yeah.
When you circulate Title 18 in your proposed redrafts of Section 9 to the subcommittee, circulate your